Station number 16721, Mr. Edward Gregg, Rail 3.
Mr. Gregg, Rail 3. We were talking about the 3-inch mortars, Mr. Gregg. What was the drill for firing the mortar?
Well, the drill, well, after the mortar was mounted, the number one, he laid the mortar onto the target. Number two, he's responsible for popping the bomb in, not dropping the bomb in the barrel. Then the 3 and 4 gun numbers, they supplied, they had the cases of bombs, and fed them up to the number two. When the fire was generally a smoke bomb, they get to check the range on the target. Then that was generally a 3-round rapid fire, 3 bombs in. Then the number one relay again onto the target. And when you've seen your effect, if they were right on a target, right on. 3-round rapids again. Then there was the check again, see that the cause when the bomb is about 10 ton pressure, and on soft ground, the base plate would sink in. In actions, sometimes you had to dig it out, it was down 2 or 3 foot. So you're more or less lying down to.
You would be able to get rounds off very quickly.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
So there'd be rounds in the air while you were still sending them off.
You said you had to be careful. You didn't catch the first one coming out. You had to drop it in the barrel, you know, and bump, and bump, bump. You had to be very careful. You didn't catch one coming out. But you are drilled up to this, you know.
You mentioned smoke, and what other types of bombs did you find?
It was a smoke bomb and explosive HA, you know.
Did you, how was the mortar transported?
Well, they had 1,500 weight trucks. The mortar was in a big box, you know, on the back of the truck. Now, later on, we got Brent carriers, which had a box on the back. Then later on, when we got into Burma, they mounted them in the front of the carrier, that big rubber pad with the base plate. Well, it was a fixed base plate in the carrier, and the mortar was mounted in the carrier, and this was to save time when the old way you were either carrying it, marching, or if the target, you had to go and mount it to hit the target, you had to go and get it out of the box and mount it up. And now, with the carrier, the driver, he was number two. He was driving the carrier, and the driver used to, the actual used to put the aiming plate out, and you lined your carrier up to that. Your little visor had a marker where you lined up. When you got it lined up, number one, he sets the sights and that, then you fired. Boom.
Were there any faults on the weapon at all that kept recurring?
Now and again, you got a misfire, you know, instead of going thousands of yards, it's just nothing. There was a set drill, right? You hit the deck, and you waited for 10 seconds or so. Then you went and just picked it up. And but the bombs, the tail end, were like cellophane packets of mixture, you know, the
explosive mixture.
Explosive. They were fastened on my legs, springs, like helmets, you know, they keep my shirt. For certain distances, you added extra of these cartridges on the bottom, you know. And then the bottom of the bomb was just like a shotgun cartridge, which it goes off, then ignites this, these cellophane packets, you know, and it makes it, and this gives it the thrust out of the barrel. And went about 2,000 feet up.
Were you, was this a battalion weapon rather than in companies or
it was a battalion.
So you'd be with headquarter company?
Headquarter company, and there was four mortars. And whatever company that wanted mortars, you know, in action, well, you were either split up or you went in with that company to support. And each platoon had a 2-inch mortar man, you know, with a small mortar, which was extra. But when it was a long distance target, you got your 3-inch mortars. You could use them in a lot of ways, especially in the jungle, you know, in Burma, and that, where the Jap was the trees, you couldn't see the man. And put a mortar fire down, it was just like a thing, cut a gun, slicing the trees down, then you could see where you were, sort of business, you know.
Was there a danger in territory or ground like that of, you know, the overhead trees causing bombs to go off early?
Well, you had to watch that, like, see, you had a clear area to get you.
What was the ideal ground? What, as a mortar man, what ideal ground would you look for setting up your mortar and firing it?
Well, you just accept the ground you're on. It's time you hit rock, and you bonk, bonk, and the base plate, and it just spread eagle slid on the rock, you know. So you try and pick a spot where the base plate, which had like spikes on, could bed in, you know.
In relation to the forward, the rifle company positions, where would the mortar team be in a firing sequence?
Well, we were more or less just at the rear, or we could be in line with them, because majority of the fight, in the 1940 war, where they had all the trenches and that, you know, that was out. You're moving forward. When you had to stop for night, then you just scuttered a hole and dug up for the night, or 2 or 3 days. And the mortars were probably mounted at night to cover certain areas, you know.
What were you actually doing at Bridlington? You'd got there, you were in the 3-inch mortars, well, obviously, but what were you doing?
Well, apart from daily training, Bridlington, we route marches, those exercises, or if you're down to town, there was a cafe place. We took all the glass out the windows and put some roofing felt on, then painted a wood frame and all that, and then there's machine gun positions to cover the harbour, you know. On the front, we were in pillboxes, and during at night you stood till, you know, morning, at dusk you stood till. During the day you went down on the beaches with coils of dannet wire, barbed wire. Of course the sea used to wash them up, and you used to go down during the day and rewire it all up.
Was the beachhead mined? Was the coast mined?
On the tops, there was an instant where the brigadier, he was called Furlong, and he come inspecting the front. And this was about, he was about 3 or 4 miles on the outskirts of Britain. And he was one of these clever lads, you know, he had a stick. And he was inspecting this minefield, and he decided to hop over the top. And he went to there's no more furling, you know. You got the officers, funny officers like that. The majority were good. You know, they're like ballast here, you know. But they always got these clever dicks like, and when they were doing anything like, the lads used to say, right, hit the deck, he's going to do something daft.
Were the civilians still in the town?
Yes, so we were in the town. We were in billets. There were private houses, empty private houses, in amongst the civilians, you know. And the DLI got a good name in Bridlington. We kept the gardens nice, you know. And in town, well, it's the old DLI song goes, you know, we are respected wherever we go.
You would be invited into the homes, were you?
Yes, this is true. Uh-huh. Next door to the three and smallest, we were in a similar house like this, and there's two old deers next door, and every time in the winter we come out on parade, they were out there with some mitts, little scarves, you know, and they used to more or less inspect with couple of, where's your mitt? I got no mitts, there's a scarf. And the people themselves, there's different jobs we're doing down the town. We were actually sweeping the streets at times. And the RAF, they brought their, like the national, the infantry, they brought. And we would train them.
This was the RAF regiment, was it?
That's RAF regiment in Bridlington, and we used to assist in training them, roadblocks and things like this.
Did you come under any enemy bombing? Did they get across?
We got them German planes coming in. They used to come in over Bridlington and come round and up the toll. And
did they drop anything on you?
Well, there's odd bombs dropped in the area, but they didn't do any damage, you know. We had German planes come down on the course. There's a couple come down in our area, you know. And we had to go over and catch them coming out, and those that couldn't get out had to go in and help them out, which now and again.
Did you yourself get involved in taking any of these Germans as prisoners? You know?
Well, I was near hand, but other lads had gone in, you know. We just had to have a bayonet in, you know. Of course, you can imagine a plane coming down and hitting the deck. They wouldn't argue about Who got them? I've got them all, General.
The battalion was basically reforming after its tribulations in France.
That's right. Uh-huh.
How was that proceeding while you were at Bridlington? Was it
well, this was all in with the trip. All your reinforcements, you do that set training when you go into the army.
Basic training.
Basic training. The rest just fits around you.
As a mortarman, did you have to do the usual guards that the others did?
Oh yes, it's headquarter guards, and you had to be spick and span. What a sergeant major called Lackenby. He belonged to Jarrow, and he used to come round inspecting, you know, and tap your foot really stick, you know, and you had to take off lift your head and check the studs in your boots and things like that, you know.
So on guard, you polished even down to the studs of your boots.
Oh yes, and the stick man, the best what the only officer thought was the best turnout man, who was stick orderly for the CO. Of course, you didn't do any sentry work. You were in the CO outside his door, and you were doing messages and that. You know.
So you said headquarters guard. Where were the headquarters in the town?
Well, in a big house on the seafront.
Did you have coastal guards to do as well, in addition to the headquarters?
Well, the battalion was spread out along the seafront and along the coast in those pillboxes, you know, but every 200 or 300 yards a pillbox, and the different companies were spread out on the seafront like that. The company headquarters would be in the town, but the duties was on the front, you know. We slept in the pillboxes. You got up in the morning, and if there was no fresh water, you had to wash and shave in sea water. You know, the sea was coming up. But you got hardened to this thing.
What time of the year was this?
Oh, no, it was just after Dunkirk, which was about May or June. And it was 2 or 3 or 4 months just before Christmas of 41. There was a heavy winter in Bridlington around that time, coming up for the Christmas, and Bridlington was snowed in.
This was Christmas 1940-41, that winter.
That's it, aye. And we couldn't get anything in because roads, of course. Lads out there. We were up the road. We opened the road from Bridlington to Scarborough, digging cars out. And after about a week, after we cleared the road, the railway, word come out that there's a leave. That's if the line that was cleared. And this was on the Thursday, and by the Friday and the Saturday morning, there wasn't a bit of snow, so we could get out on leave. There's always something to do. Route marches. Used to go on route marches 20, 30 miles. Used to come back limp and limp and blisters. But once you got back, you were washed up there and your best bit living took her on and went down to town as if.
You had a leave at Christmas or New Year? When was your leave?
It all depends. If you were due for leave, there's always not the whole battalion, you know, that just certain groups from each went on the, you know.
Did you do manoeuvres at this stage, or was still coastal work?
No, don't. As I say, you train all the time. Exercises, route marches. We done one from Bridlington, we marched from Bridlington and across the moors with me and the target was Skelton. Now this particular exercise, the Dunhams, we were reserve. And we set off, and it was across the moors, and there was snow on the moors. The old army coats were kept, you know, wrapped, sleeping on the moors. But we marched, we set off. We got over to Skelton, now and then. In our brigade, there was Royal Scots, the Berkshire Regiment. They were the two that were fought. They had to take the town, you know. Of course, when the Durhams got there, they did, you know, there's all the umpires. Who are you? What are you doing here? You know, well, we are DLI, we're reserve battalion. Well, where's the Welsh? Where's the Berks? So they ponder, right. Durhams, you go in, take the town. We went in, took the town. When the regiments that were supposed to take the town come in, we were having one nosh and waiting for the wagons to bring it back. But we marched about 100 and odd miles. There was an article in the Chronicle about it, how the Durhams had marched. You know.
What pace did you march at on a route march?
Well,
it wasn't light infantry pace, was it?
Oh, no. See, because I always thought, and again, I was leading a Section 8, and you go by the slowest man. You know, well then, you get to the point where you catch up. Anybody tell you that, the artillery, they're just, you know, ambling along. With, we got to them, right lads, much attention, and you used to overtake them, just like you'd overtake them. You know, the church parades, or any regiment parade, it was the first.
Kind of a ceremonial or parade
that's
march, which would be light infantry pace.
Right. Yes, uh-huh.
Did you carry a great deal of weight with you when you were on a route march? What kind of weight were you carrying?
Big pack on the back, pack on the side, the entrenching tool, your bayonet, you had the two pouches, and then pouches had to hold Bren gun magazines, you know. And this is what you had to have when you go into attack, things like that, you know.
So in a route march, or any march actually, going into action, your big pouches were for Bren gun magazines.
That's it.
For the Bren gunner in the section or what have you.
Uh-huh.
So where did you carry your own rifle magazine, cartridges
was
and things?
A bandolier. Bandolier around, you know. When we first went in, I had anti-tank rifles, which fired about 5.5 bullet, you know, and anti-tank rifle, that was, you know, 6-7 foot long. It weighed like, and you had to carry this on road marches.
This was the boys' rifle, was it? The boys' anti-tank rifle.
That's it. Uh-huh. The mortars, we used to carry the mortars on road marches. And this, you know, you've got in training when you're young. Yeah.
On your march in those early days, did you march in column or were you split up in some way?
No, in column. It's split up like, you know, sections each side of the road. And you got your rakes and get your feet up. Get the ditch, you know, and your legs up and get the blood running back, you know, all the different tips. There's old soldiers in amongst you, you know, who help you along the line, you know. Happy days. days.
How long were you at Bridlington?
June 40. And we had a Christmas in Bridlington. Then it was about a similar time. It was about June, May, probably about August, September. We moved from Bridlington to, well, the brigadier, he got transferred to an armour division at Bury St Edmunds. And he wouldn't move unless he had a battalion at Durham's, the 2nd Battalion.
Who was this? Do you remember the name of the brigadier?
I just can't remember his name.
Just before we come to that, so you were at Bridlington just over a year.
Over a year, yes. Uh-huh.
Can we just go back to this to talk about Christmas in the army? How did the army celebrate Christmas?
Well, the first Christmas. This was before I went into the mortars, and I was in B Company. I got pulled in for the platoon for a cook, assistant cook. This was the Christmas dinner here. And they all come. We were the platoon headquarters was in a big house, somewhere like this, you know. One of the rooms was a dining room. I had a Christmas dinner, and we all.
What did you get for Christmas dinner?
Well, the usual, near enough, but, a bit pork and stuff like that. We were fed.
Was it a beer ration did you get at that time?
Yeah, you got beer.
You weren't served by the NCOs or the sergeants and the officers?
No, you just come in. I was loving it on the plates.
But as you say, you're quite scattered.
See, the platoon, there's a platoon headquarters, then the platoon itself, they were in another house probably across the road or in the next street. They were built it in that house. And when the parades, the parade outside and round at the platoon headquarters, and we went on whatever we were. as I say, I was assistant cook for about a couple of weeks. Then I went on 2-inch mortar man in the platoon headquarters, and there was this course for 3-inch mortars, and I went on this course, and this is how I got into Sergeant Major McLean.
Coming towards the end of your Bridlington time, would you say that you were a pretty well trained battalion then?
Oh, yes. The British 2nd Div, at that time, they were one of the top divs in the British Army. They had fought rearguard action in Dunkirk. Granted, there was a lot of young lads, young blood, but over that year we done a lot of hard training. And until you get into a battle, then this is where it shows, you know. I would say we were pretty good. We got some funny jobs to do, like this. Detachments going. There was Hornsey Airdrum, RAF, put a guard for that. There was a detention camp, was supply guards for that. You know, there's a mixture of duties that cropped up, you know.